When I opened the door, Apple was there, just as I'd expected. But she was out of breath and holding Rupert P.'s ankle in her fist, the rest of him draped on the floor behind her, limp as the sack of coal Santa brings for the naughty kids.
"I found one," she said.
And that was how my three friends and I came to be in possession of our very own boy bander.
I mean, there's really not more you can say after something like that.
I love you.
Hey there, people. Welcome back to the Great YA Quest. I'm your host, Renee M.P.T. Cray, and I'm almost 30. I have no chill for teenagers and their hormones and their drama, yet I have a problem that involves hoarding and reading tons of young adult books in the search for one that I can genuinely rate 5 stars. This search has taken me to many fantasy kingdoms and dystopian worlds, and, you know, all those things, they just all seem to involve hot guys who growl. But never before have I been taken to a hotel room where there is a tied-up boy bander and 4 insane fangirls who are relatively self-aware of just how crazy they really are. So I hope you're ready for Kill the Boy Band by Goldie Moldovsky. Now, it was the title of this one that sucked me in, guys. I was browsing my favorite used bookstore, Second and Charles, and I was looking through the YA section, you know, as I do, and I just see this bright pink statement on the shelf, just says in all caps, "Kill the Boy Band." So, of course, my grumpy soul just reverberated right to that frequency. Because, so I'll just be honest here, I've never understood the obsession with boy bands. I've had my share of crushes and all that, but boy bands was never something that I was into. I always kind of liked female artists more as I was listening to music growing up. And I feel like that still holds true today. Of course, I like, you know, the Beatles and the Monkees and the Beach Boys, like very vintage stuff mostly. So I never really got into boy bands. Like, I remember having friends who were obsessed with, like, One Direction. Shout out to you guys, you know who you are. And even now I see, like, this, the BTS stuff that goes around, and I've just never understood that. That's never been something that I've gotten into. So seeing a thing that says, "Kill the Boy Band," I was like, yes, yes, this book is speaking to me right this second. So that was how that happened. I don't know how I missed this book, honestly, because it came out in 2016, and I was definitely reading YA at that point. So I'm not sure how I missed it, because it would have definitely always been an instant pickup for me. But, you know, making up for lost time, I saw it, and it was the first time I had ever heard of it, so I bought it based on just the title alone. Now, the cover on this one is all black, and the title, like I said, is just kind of stamped onto it in this really bright, all caps, bold pink statement. It just says, "Kill the Boy Band," right there. You cannot miss it. If you take that dust jacket off the book, the actual inside of the cover is this really bright pink, which, you know, y'all know me. I love my pink books. And it's got the title there in black script. While on the inside of that cover, there is black and pink montage of these boy band posters that say, "Live in New York City, the Ruperts, Thanksgiving Days." So it's an advertisement for this show that this story centers around. And that kind of sold me. I mean, I was already pretty much sold after the title, but seeing how pretty the book was and that on the inside of the dust jacket, it was a pink book, I needed to get it because I'm just looking for a pink book that will make up for the disappointment that I felt after reading The Gracier. Now, the premise of this story is very simple. It's 4 friends, Aaron, Isabel, Apple, and our main character, who never reveals her name as this is told in first-person perspective. They are all crazy fans of a boy band called The Ruperts. Now, I don't mean like fans where you have a Pinterest board dedicated to them, or, you know, you secretly follow their Instagram. No, like, they will climb buildings to see these boys. They are crazy, crazy fans. And they are, like I said, all of these fans of this boy band called the Rupert's. And each of these four guys, they're together in this band because they all have the first name Rupert. So the story is that they were all, like, on this, like, reality show, like a Britain's Got Talent sort of thing. And someone referred to them collectively as the Rupert's, so they became a band just from that. So they don't necessarily have much musical talent, not all of them. They just all have the first name Rupert. The girls each have a favorite one, and they live solely for that Rupert. With that premise being given, I was expecting nothing more than just comedy. What else can you do with something like that? Like, these girls are just crazy stalker fans, and they capture one of these Ruperts. So I just was hoping for some chuckles. So let's get into our motley crew. First up, we have our main character. Now, unless I missed it, we actually don't ever get her name. And I went back afterwards because I thought maybe I did miss it, because that's super weird. So I went back afterwards and I was doing some research on the book, and it seems like nobody else got her name either. So she just pretty much never reveals her actual name. She always introduces herself to people by giving the name of, like, various 80s heroines from her favorite 80s movies. So she'll walk up to somebody and be like, "Hi, Lydia Deetz," you know. Her friends never refer to her by her name either. And she's the one who's telling us this story. She starts the story off with the opening line of, "People have called me crazy." But she goes on to claim that she's actually not crazy. And she says that she is going to tell us a true story. Now, what we know for sure about this girl is that she is a writer. She talks about how she writes fanfics of the Ruperts. She recently lost her dad, and that loss is kind of what drove her so hardcore into being a fan of the Ruperts, like, as kind of a distraction. And she is specifically obsessed with Rupert K, is the Rupert that she's obsessed with. Now, she sometimes has daydreams about her and him, which is, you know, like, what you would expect. She fantasizes about him, but it's to the point where they're almost more like hallucinations. Like, she feels like he's really with her. So she gets really, really into this stuff, and she uses it for her fanfics. So yeah, she's, like, really hardcore obsessed with this guy, and her descriptions of Rupert K are, like, well, they're exactly what you'd expect. Rupert K was beautiful. He had ruddy cheeks, but the cute kind that looked like he'd always just come from running a marathon out in the cold. He'd had braces when he was 12, so his teeth were straight and perfect. He had brown hair that he liked to keep short, and that he was always pushing back off his forehead, especially when he didn't want to answer a television interviewer's question. He loved fantasy video games, folk music, and baking thumbprint cookies with his grandma. When he smiled, sometimes he would bite the inside of his right cheek. He had a beauty mark on the nape of his neck, right where his heartbeat pulsed on his carotid artery. It was the shape of California and the size of a pinky nail. Recently, he'd taken to wearing pork pie hats on the crown of his head, something his fans were now copying. He wore sunglasses a lot because his pale green eyes were super sensitive to the sun. He had a tiny scar beneath his lower lip that he got when he fell off the jungle gym when he was 6. And he seemed to take pleasure in ruining my life with how perfect he was. Like I said, exactly what you expect from a YA fangirl, but wow, like, she's talking about locations of veins and stuff when he was a child, and wow. So she's really, just from that description alone, you know that she is not playing. When she says she is obsessed with this guy and she lives for him, man, she means it. At least, though, She's admitting it because all the YA heroines are like, I don't need him. I don't love him. But I know all these things about his random past and like where his little dimple is and this, blah, blah, blah. At least this one's admitting it, right? She knows how crazy she is. So there's that. In the group, our MC functions as the voice of reason. She's always the one who says that she is trying to get the girls to do like the best thing and be the least crazy, right? And so when they capture a boy bander, which is the premise of this novel, she is the one who consistently wants to let him go. And she actually even attempts to do that at least once. So she tries to set him free when she's alone in the room with him. So she is really the one who's the voice of reason. Within the group, her best friend is Aaron. Now, there's all the typical stories about how they met and they bonded. Of course, they bonded over the Ruperts, and it's very typical. But she is very, very possessive over Aaron in a way that's not typical. You can't just call the bed, I said. I call the bed too, Aaron said. Guess me and Aaron are sharing the bed, Isabel said. I shot Aaron my best side eye and made sure she caught it. Cause since when did she share a bed with Isabel? Since when did she share a bed with anyone other than me? I waited for Aaron to say something about the sleeping arrangements. If I put up a protest, I'd be labeled a needy loser who was attached at the hip to Aaron, only said with a more growly voice and Isabel's signature sneer. It had to be Aaron who spoke up, who chose me. But she didn't. She just scrolled through her phone, ignoring me. I wasn't used to it. Our MC is constantly referring to Aaron as their leader and waiting for her to make decisions, but she wants and expects Aaron to side with her. And when Aaron doesn't side with her, she's always pointing it out. She's always very disappointed in that. With that, let's move on to Aaron. Aaron is, in a nutshell, that girl that all the other girls want to be, and she knows it. The way Aaron said stuff, with her catwalk confidence and her eat shit smile, it made me feel giddy and confident too, because I was on her team, and when she said those things, it was like I was saying them too. I met Aaron last year, at the start of high school, and even though we were both freshmen, Aaron was already popular by then. She was popular the moment she stepped foot on school grounds, maybe because she simply decided to be. Where Aaron went, so went everything shiny and new, and all she left in her wake were drooling boys and awed stares. She was the opposite of me. Aaron's favorite member of the band is Rupert X, who is the bad, pretty boy of the band. Basically, he's the typical YA guy, and she likes that. She has been growing a little bit away from our MC at the beginning of this, as mentioned, and our MC is not having it. She will not let Aaron go easily. The girl that Aaron has been getting closer to is Isabel. Now, it is never really specified to my memory what her race is, but I believe that she is Hispanic, as she often speaks in Spanish. She is presented as being very aggressive, very growly every time we hear about Isabel just growling and being sneery. So she's basically like got a bad constant case of the teenagerness. And she even has the tendency to be violent and break the law in pursuit of the Ruperts, particularly her favorite, Rupert L. Before I ever saw Isabel's face, I saw her boots. They had too many useless zippers and buckles and straps. Useless because the boots looked like they were falling apart. The faux leather tongue spilled over the laces, and the parts over the sides of her ankles folded over too, so that it looked like she'd stuffed her feet into two badly bruised bananas that were halfway peeled. You guys looking for the Ruperts? Her voice was deep, skeptical. It turned out that Aaron and I were in the right place, but we would have never been able to get a good look at the boys if it hadn't been for Isabel. She led us to an alleyway, climbed over a dumpster, and then up a fire escape. And when we followed her, Aaron and I got our first ever glimpse of the boys. The prize for best fan went to Isabel. Easy. She knew how to get to the Ruperts. And the truth was, we were lucky to have her on our team. Isabel runs a Ruperts fan site, and this fan site is basically her baby. The final member of our girl group is Apple. Apple is obsessed with Rupert P, which is the boy bander that our MC hates the most, also coincidentally the one that they end up kidnapping. Apple is rich. She was adopted from China by these just really filthy rich people. And so she gets to take all her parents' money and use it to do outrageous things in pursuit of the Ruperts. And so that's kind of how they met Apple. She was like at this concert and she had seats and no one else had seats. So she's the one who will fund all of the craziness that this group gets into. The best way to describe Apple is, quite frankly, an overweight and very simple girl. Her appearance was one of Apple's main hang-ups. Fat was what she saw in the mirror every day and the conclusion she always jumped to when things didn't go right in her life. And I'm certain it was also the reason she chose Rupert P, out of all the Ruperts, to love the most. I have this theory that choosing which boy to love in a boy band says a lot about a person. I think Erin loved Rupert X because she believed she was hot enough to love such an attractive person. I think Isabel loved Rupert L because she felt she was tough enough to love someone with muscles so big. I think I loved Rupert K deep down because he was the most approachable one in the bunch. And I think Apple loved Rupert P because she couldn't even envision herself being loved by one of the cute boys. She loved him because he was the only one who she thought could possibly love her back. So that quote in and of itself has a lot to unpack right there, but it pretty much perfectly describes Apple in this book. She is self-conscious, but she is only defined through food, whether it be from her name to the fact that she packs an outrageous amount of snacks with her. Like, she literally brings an entire suitcase of just loose popcorn, which, I mean, honestly, that's a mood in and of itself. But that's pretty much all we get out of Apple. And we will be addressing that later on, so just hang tight with that. But that's pretty much who Apple is. She's very simple, very sweet, and very underdeveloped. Got all that? Good. Let's summarize. Our MC, the non-named fanfic writer who's telling this story, is obsessed with Rupert K, the perfect guy. Erin, the gorgeous and confident leader, is obsessed with Rupert X, the bad pretty boy. Apple, plus-sized and sweet-tempered, is obsessed with Rupert P, the least liked member of the band, whose true talent is his ability to juggle. Isabel, violent and aggressive fansite owner, is obsessed with Rupert L, the ruggedly muscled and depressingly dumb boy. So, with all that said in place, let's get into our plot. This book opens with a quote, which reads, "It is always the policy to speak the truth, unless, of course, you are an exceptionally good liar," by Jerome Klopka Jerome. Now, I've never read anything by Jerome Klopka Jerome, but it appears that he was a comedy writer who kind of inserted, you know, social messages and statements within his comedy works. So that kind of works well with this here. But the main thing is that, we've got this quote about being a very good liar before we even get into the story. So you read that on the first page and then you switch over to the next page and the first line of the book is our MC saying, "People have called me crazy." When we get into the plot, we go right in with the girls. Obviously, they're all massive fans of the Ruperts and they are plotting on how to get into this sold out show that the boys will be hosting on Thanksgiving in New York City, which is where they, the girls, are located, right? And so they come up with a couple of ideas, but none of them are going to work out. Apple can't even buy them tickets because no one is selling. But Isabel, who always seems to have inside info due to her website, guesses the hotel that the band will stay in. So they're like, let's just get a room in the hotel that the boys will be in, even if we can't go to their show. So Apple puts the down payment on a room, and they kind of have their fingers crossed that it will be correct. And when it comes down to it, Isabel is right. They have a spot in the hotel where the Ruperts will be staying. So on that day of, they go up to their floor, they're getting settled in, and then while getting ice, Apple sees Rupert P. on their floor, floor 8, which they didn't even think he was going to be there, but she just has like a massive meltdown at seeing her idol, and she goes to grab him from behind, slams him into the ice machine, and knocks him out cold, which, beautiful. And just like that, these girls have their own member of the Ruperts. They tie him up with pink pantyhose, because what else would you do? And they just kind of wait for him to wake up. And when he does, they all immediately fulfill their roles in the group. Apple is head over heels and wants to make out with him. Isabel taunts him to get content for her website. Aaron makes the final decision that they are going to continue holding him for the time being, even though it's kind of a dangerous thing to do. She's like, no, we're doing it. And our MC, frustrated that everyone is acting crazy and that Aaron is not listening to her, she leaves the room for the first time. Once she's left, the MC goes down to the bar in the hotel where she meets a bartender whom she refers to as Civil War Bartender, which is hilarious and honestly made me feel like I can see him clearly. She's just like, this guy looks like he would just be so into reenacting the Civil War with his beard and his attitude, and he thinks he's so cool, but he's not. Yeah, pretty legit. Now, the two of them get into some pretty deep discussions about why fangirls fangirl. And moment of honesty here. I am a massive fangirl over crazy amounts of stuff. So even though I've been making fun of these girls, right, for the boy band thing, I do get it. Like I said, I've never been into boy bands specifically. That appeal, I've never understood. But I do get what it is to be a fangirl. I am still a fangirl over lots of things, right? And if you follow my Instagram stories, when I was reading this, I had mentioned that I make fun of these girls, but at the same time, when I met Elijah Wood, I have like some legit memory loss from that moment because I was so excited. And if you're wondering who Elijah Wood is, yes, it is the guy who played Frodo in Lord of the Rings. I told you I am a big nerd. So I understand what they're talking about, that you get so excited over some of this stuff. Other people may have seen fangirls as crazy teenage girls obsessed with a fad, but they couldn't understand the small but important joy you can get from indulging in these fandoms. They didn't understand that a new gif of Rupert K. grinning at you could be the difference between a crap day and a beautiful one. They didn't get the friendships that formed, the community of people who shared in your same joy. Maybe it was obsession, but it was also happiness, an escape from the suckiness of everyday life. And when you find something that makes you happy and giddy and excited every day, us fangirls know a truth that everyone else seems to have forgotten. You hold on to that joy tenaciously for as long as you can, because it's rare to get excited about anything these days. Ask your parents. So yeah, pretty legit explanation for what it feels like to be a fangirl, and she's not wrong. You can find a lot of joy in, you know, the world of story and Hollywood and fandoms and all these things, you know, so there is a point to it, and she does have that point, but of course, with the kidnapping thing and the climbing onto buildings and all that sort of stuff, you kind of losing the point there. But the point still stands. As we get older, we do move away from being excited about little things, and we start to become more worried about how we appear to others if we get too excited and we fall into routine and we just kind of settle. So this discussion about why fangirls exist and how there are positives to the craziness, it feels pretty right in my experience. And now that that monologue is over, Erin comes down and she meets our MC at the bar. She calms down our MC as only she can do, and then they are about to go back to the room when they see someone sitting at a table. You kind of expect it to be one of the Ruperts, but no, it's a girl. And they recognize her as being Michelle Hornsbury. Now, Michelle Hornsbury is Rupert P's girlfriend. So Aaron just kind of boldly goes up to her and starts chatting with her for a bit. And they say that it's weird how she doesn't really seem to know where he is. She had tweeted that she had just seen him a little bit ago and that he was showing her the sights. And she says now that she's waiting for him, but they think, you know, that's a little bit odd. Because we just saw him on the 8th floor, and guess what? Now you're going to be waiting for a long time. He's not coming. So Michelle kind of gets flustered by them asking her questions, and she gets up and she leaves, leaving her purse behind. And Aaron just goes through it, and she takes her lip gloss, which is really creepy. But then they go back up to the room, and that's where Michelle's boyfriend is still tied up. When they get there, Isabel is just site updating. She could not care less about what is happening in the room. And so she is not watching Apple, who is sitting on Rupert P's lap and licking his face. Remember when I said I get fangirling? I don't get that. That's gross. But there you have it. Once they pull Apple off of Rupert P, poor guy, he threatens them all with jail charges if they don't let him go right then. But Aaron still says they won't let him go. But just then, Rupert's cell phone rings. Of course, they pull it out of his pocket. They don't answer it, but they let it go to voicemail. And it turns out that it's the hairstylist for the band. Aaron put the newest voicemail message on speaker. "Babe," came the deep male voice on the phone, "where are you? I've been waiting in my room all this time. Just went out for a bit of ice, did you? I hate when you can be such an arsehole sometimes. But then you're well aware of that, aren't you? I'm done waiting. You can spend the night in your own room." And just like that, I knew we had him, and that Aaron wasn't about to let him go. Rupert P. was gay. Since the Ruperts have been making bank on the allowances of teenage girls, this is obviously a devastating reveal for Rupert P., and now he's able to be blackmailed by our resident group of psychos. Following that information and the discovery of his phone, the girls go through his pictures and his gallery, and they find some pretty incriminating, very personal photos and videos. So they figure out that Michelle Hornsbury is his cover girlfriend, and they call her a beard, which is, I've never heard that term before, and I think that's really funny. So she is his beard to make him appear straight when really he's gay. And they now have access to basically the biggest Rupert's scoop with proof. All right, Rupert P said. Just tell me what I can do so that you don't show anyone those videos of me and Griffin, please. Aaron walked over to his chair, stood right before him. He couldn't see her, but something told me this wasn't about him so much as it was about Aaron. She stood tall, looking down her nose at him. "Why don't you beg for me, love?" Something about the way that she said it, the way she made the word love sound so cruel, brought me to my senses. Our MC, of course, tries to talk them all out of this and basically says, like, you can't out him. Like, that's not yours to do. And of course, Aaron says, like, no, I'm not really doing that, but we gotta use this information. And so she's kind of going even further off the deep end. And once again, our MC is low man on the totem pole. She is outvoted here. So first thing that the girls do is that they take Rupert's phone and they text the other Ruperts to make sure that none of them are in the room. And they say that they are all at the sound check. And they're like, where are you? You're supposed to be here. We go live in, like, I don't know, however long it is. But bottom line is none of them are in the room. So off they all go, despite our MC's protest, like, hey, this isn't right. We shouldn't be doing this. So the three of them go off and our MC remains in the room with Rupert P. And now that she is alone with him, she decides that the best thing she can do is just let him go. There's no one there to override her, and she thinks that this has gone on far enough. So she starts looking through everyone's luggage for something sharp that she can use to cut his bonds. And she doesn't find anything like a knife, but she does find a ridiculously accurate replica of Aaron's favorite, Rupert X, his dagger necklace. And that's in Aaron's luggage. So unfortunately, it's nothing she can really use. So she has to try to untie Rupert P. And she's working on untying him. And he says, like, can you come up and, like, scratch my nose? And like a noob, she does this. And things really go badly. He grabs her with the part of his hand that is free, and he's holding her wrist and starting to threaten her. And he can see enough to read the bracelet on her wrist, which says Daddy in memory of her deceased father, and which, when she is upset, she snaps against her skin to cause pain because she says that this helps her focus. So as all this is going on, Apple and Isabel come back into the room and they immediately see what's happening and they stop the escape attempt. And because she doesn't want to stay there with them and Rupert P., whom she now hates even more, our MC leaves the room for the second time to go up and join Aaron in the boys' room. Because even though she's like, oh, this isn't quite morally right, she is still a psychotic fangirl who knows about the birthmarks on the carotid arteries, so she must go. Aaron invites her to ransack through the Rupert's things, and again, she tries not to, but then she finds the stuff of Rupert K., her favorite, and she lays down on his side of the bed and has a little daydream. Don't worry, I didn't take a hit off Rupert K.'s inhaler. I wasn't that sick. I only pressed the mouthpiece against my lips. In a way, if you squinted, it was like we just kissed. Obviously, I've thought about what it would be like to kiss Rupert Kirk. Okay, yes, it's a little embarrassing to admit, but every Rupert K. fangirl fantasizes about the same thing, and I'm certainly not above it all. I actually have a whole little scenario of how it would go down. We'd be in this dangerous situation, or maybe just an adventurous one. I haven't decided yet. But then, when we were finally alone and we'd had a moment to catch our breaths, he'd look at me as if he was seeing me for the first time. He'd put the palm of his hand on my cheek and gently caress it with his thumb. His own cheeks would turn super red, the way they do when he's shy or out of breath. Only this time, he'd be shy and out of breath for the best reason. He'd lean in really slowly, and I'd know that he wanted to kiss me, but he'd make me wait for it a little bit. He'd fish for the kiss, because fishing for the kiss is always the most adorably romantic way to go, Natch. And then finally, his lips would be on mine. They'd be soft. They'd be perfect.
Ugh. That's... yeah, now we've all got that in our brains. You're welcome.
Moving on. They find Rupert X's diary, in which he talks about how he is so gorgeous that he can't find anyone who is beautiful enough to be worthy of him. And just a moment of appreciation here, because we all know that if the guys in YA books kept journals, they would all read exactly like that.
Day 29, still can't find someone beautiful enough. Day 30, my reflection is still the most attractive thing I've ever found.
That's exactly what it would be like. So, moment of appreciation. Again, this book is ridiculously self-aware. After all this is done, our MC makes a joke about how they should take off their clothes and lie there waiting for their boys to come back. And Aaron gets really cold at this, which is very surprising to our MC and just reinforces to her that something is up with Erin, from the way that she's not listening to the MC anymore and she's all of a sudden close with Isabel, and now she's not laughing at her jokes. Like, our MC is just kind of like, something is up with Erin. This is not my best friend. So our MC doesn't know why, and she's really butthurt about that. Now, I know a lot of things have already been revealed, but pretty much the stuff that I've been talking about is stuff that comes out really quickly in the beginning half of the book. So from here on out is where I'm going to go ahead and call spoilers. Things are going to get much more intense, much more quickly from here on out. So just be warned, going ahead, massive spoilers. Now, because Erin is being so bitchy, our MC goes back to the room. Every time she leaves the room, she comes back and something's going to be terrible. The last time she left the room and came back and Apple was licking Rupert P's face. Oh, this time she comes back into the room and lo and behold, Apple has taken off Rupert P's blindfold so that she can take selfies with him because she is apparently that dumb. So now he can see them and ID all of them. Since they really can't let him go now, and they need to buy some time because this show is going to be going on in like 20 minutes and everyone's blowing up his phone saying, where are you? Where are you? We're backstage now. Where are you? So they take his phone and Isabel tweets on his official account, I quit. And just like that, Rupert P is out of the Ruperts. And he starts saying, no one's going to believe that. No one's going to believe that. No one's going to believe it. But they do. And the show goes on without him. And the girls all think, except for Apple, that it's better without him. And he can see it too. He's basically ruined. Now, as all this is going on, Erin finally returns to the room. And when she comes in, something really weird happens. Rupert P recognizes her. As Rupert P took her in, it seemed like he was doing so for the first time. He seemed stumped for an insult, quiet and contemplative. And then he said, I know you. Erin's eyes went slightly bigger than usual, and Rupert P's lips curled from a grimace into a smile. Bloody hell, now this all makes sense. You're the Dublin girl. Dublin girl? What does he mean? How do you know who she is? He's delusional and butthurt, Erin said. Don't listen to him. You were at the Dublin show, I said. She was more than just at the Dublin show, Rupert P says. She was the Dublin show. Erin is so upset by this that she leaves. So our MC also leaves to follow her and try to figure out what is going on. And she confronts her and basically just asks, you need to tell me what's going on. We knew you were at this show because Erin had gone to this Dublin show with one of her parents or both of her parents or something, and no one else got to go. This was a special show that Erin got to go to that none of the other group got to go to. And as far as the group knew, nothing had happened. She just got to go to the show. Yay, you were on vacation with your family, and that happened. But now, apparently, something did. And so, at the pressure from our MC, finally, Erin brings everything out into the open. Erin yanked the phone out of my hands. Get a grip, she said. I'm of sound mind. Actually, my mind's never been sounder. You may not understand my actions right now, but one day you'll come to realize that what I'm doing is really great. No, not just great. Right. Boy bands need to go, and we're going to be the ones to eradicate them. I stood up. I had too many feelings racing through me, spilling out of me, to just sit there and listen to this. Where is all this coming from? We love boy bands, Aaron. You love boy bands. You love the Ruperts.
I hate the Ruperts.
What?
I hate the Ruperts.
It was like she liked saying it, liked the idea of it, liked the way the words bounced around on her tongue, liked the way my face fell upon hearing it. How many hours have we spent watching their videos together? I said, incredulous. Maybe all she needed was to be reminded of how much she loved the Ruperts. All we do is talk about them.
All you do is talk about them, Aaron said calmly. And you've obviously not noticed, but lately all I do is listen.
I'm sorry, but I'm done listening. The boy band is everything that is wrong with society.
Jeez, Aaron, it's just a boy band. It's not that serious.
Tell that to a world of girls who worship them. Do you see how many girls there are outside of this hotel? Thousands of girls, screaming their throats raw. And for what? A quartet of trendy haircuts who don't even know they exist. Those girls outside are lobotomies. They're zombies. Only instead of brains, they want stupid boys with mediocre singing voices. I've seen the light, and I'm not going to be part of the trend anymore. I won't just stand around and watch as a whole generation of us devolve into a sniveling puddle over some boys.
A whole generation of girls? You're the one who've always said that boy bands have a shelf life of 2 to 4 years.
That's my entire teenage life.
There was so much more to this that I didn't know.
What happened at the Dublin show?
She looked down, combed her fingers through her hair, and it made me kind of sick that I was still focused on how beautiful she was, despite the fact that she was also obviously upset about something. My mom dropped me off and told me to call her when the concert was over so she could come pick me up. I told you that part. I nodded. What I didn't tell you is that after the show, I managed to sneak backstage. It's really not that hard when you know how to talk to certain people. I found Rupert X's private dressing room, and then I took all of my clothes off, sat on his couch, and waited for him to find me.
You didn't.
Yeah, I did. I still can't believe I did that. I was such an idiot. She'd never told me any of this, and hearing it was shocking. This was big. This was huge. This was story-worthy. It was especially something you'd tell your best friend. If not as soon as it happened, then at least sometime within the 6 months since it happened.
Wait a minute. You're doing all of this because Rupert X rejected you?
Who said he rejected me? I sat down again, my knees suddenly giving out.
Are you saying I told you I was saving myself for Rupert X?
And I did.
What the fuck?
Aaron's admission was shocking on so many levels. Not just because she was talking about sex with her actual favorite boy bander, which was a mindfuck and the most improbable thing ever, but because Aaron had had sex at all. And she didn't tell me about it. When Rupert X came into the room, he was looking down at something on his phone, so he didn't notice me at first, Aaron said. But then, when he finally did, he had the strangest look on his face. His eyebrows sort of scrunched together, but he smiled. He looked at me like I was a puppy who'd managed to find some hidden treat or something. And Rupert X couldn't be disappointed because it was so damn adorable. He didn't even look particularly surprised. He didn't turn me down, but obviously I didn't want him to. After we were done, he took pictures of me on the couch. I thought, wow, he must like me so much he wants to remember me. But then he said, I'm going to send these to the lads. Don't you just hate it when they call each other lads?
Aaron.
I told him not to send the pictures to anyone. I told him that I wanted him to delete them, but he just kept talking like he hadn't even heard me. He said, I think I'll title the message, Party in My Room. I said, please don't. I started to cry. I pleaded with him not to send those pictures to anyone. I asked him, what do I have to do to keep you from sending them out? And he said, I want you to beg for me, love. The words echoed in my mind. I'd heard them before. And then I realized I heard them when Aaron herself had said them to Rupert P.
So I begged. He stroked my face and gave me this poor you smile. And then he sent them anyway.
A second later, Rupert L. and Rupert P. came bounding through the room.
Now that I think of it, Rupert P. looked like he was just coming along because it was something to do, not actually because he wanted to see a naked girl. Rupert L. looked way more excited. I took one of the couch cushions and tried to cover myself up, but it wasn't really enough. And then Rupert X. held my clothes up and said, "Looking for these?" I tried to grab them, and he said, "It was just a Snapchat, love. Are you really going to go?" He laughed, and then he gave me my clothes, and I ran out of there. I couldn't imagine Erin like that. Naked, vulnerable, at the mercy of someone who wasn't partial to her charms. "And you took his dagger necklace," I said. It wasn't a replica I'd found in her bag. It was Rupert X's actual necklace, the one he hadn't been seen wearing for the last 6 months. So I know that was a long quote, but I really wanted to just read that couple of pages out because that got really deep, really, really fast, right? And like, I was just expecting this to be kind of a funny comedy book, but it really got so serious about the problems with what happens when girls turn themselves into nothing more than sexual objects, which is, I mean, if you have heard my other episodes, you know that this is like what I always am preaching. So I thought that that emotional moment was just really on point and very, very, very sad, right? Because we never get to see these situations where in these YA books, it's kind of told like, if you just let the hot growly dude do you, then you won't have regrets. You will instantly become a woman and know what to do and blah, 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 and you have no worth until then. I mean, they don't outright say it, but that's basically what it is. And this really showed the opposite end of that, that sometimes rushing into something like that, that can be a big mistake. And you have to be really careful about giving yourself so openly, because not all of these people, just because they're good looking, will have your best interest at heart. And in fact, most of them won't. So, yeah. Now, all of Erin's desire to blackmail Rupert P. and see him beg, and that just makes so much more sense. It has all been thrown into perspective. And Erin is the one who actually says, either a little bit before that section or a little bit after, she is the one who says the words, "I want to kill the boy band." So she has a very strong vendetta. And we now see what all of these girls have been dragged into. Unable to deal with this bitter new side of Erin, because Erin goes on to insult our MC's fanfics and basically say, like, you are throwing away your life and your talents on these guys, and you are crazy because you daydream about Rupert K. all the time, and that's just stupid. So our MC leaves and goes up to the roof. She's very upset, so she's standing on the side of the roof, just kind of looking over the city, and then the unbelievable happens. "Please don't jump." The new voice frightened me, and I spun to see where it came from. And then I froze, because standing behind me was my boy. My life ruiner. My Rupert K. "Please, think about what you're doing," he said. He was coming toward me with careful steps, his arms outstretched before him as if ready to catch me if I fell. Was it bad that a part of me wanted to, just so he could? "It gets better. Life is precious. Life is beautiful?" He cursed under his breath and squeezed his eyes shut for an instant, embarrassed by his triteness. I don't know what people usually say in these sorts of situations, just please don't jump. Rupert K. was trying to talk me out of killing myself. This was the best day of my life. "Please, step back," he said. He said it as if I could move, as if I had any sort of control over my limbs in his presence. "If you move, I will be forced to take matters into my own hands." Did matters mean me?
I lunged for the edge. Just as he'd promised, Rupert K. grabbed me by the waist and pulled. I didn't have to stumble back and make myself fall on top of him. But reader, that's exactly what I did. The two of us were a jumble of limbs on the cold concrete roof, as we were clearly meant to be. Isn't that romantic? Don't you want your wedding invitation someday to just say, a tumble of limbs on the cold concrete? That's just, it's beautiful. It's romance. You know, Bronte sisters, eat your hearts out. This is what true love is. Jumble of limbs on a pavement. Okay, and let's have a moment of appreciation here for the fact that, like, we all knew this girl was crazy, but she actually tried to jump off this ledge, calling this guy's bluff that he would catch her. Like, oh my gosh. Oh. Oh, gosh. Okay. At least we all know that she's crazy. There's that. Kids don't jump off roofs. Your celebrity crush will not catch you. So these two have a cutesy moment of connection, and they chat for a bit, and he talks about how hurt he is that one of his friends let him down, which she knows is Rupert P. saying that he's out of the band, but she doesn't want to say that she knows, for obvious reasons. But then he says he has to go, and she heads back down to meet up with the rest of her group. They are all outside of the room, so because Rupert P. fans got so upset that he wasn't there, a couple of them gave up their tickets, and so Apple took that up, and she went and got to go into the show, and Isabel, I think, was off updating her site somewhere, and we know that Aaron was gone, and she had been talking to our MC before this whole thing happened. So they all end up meeting up outside of the room, and they have a quick powwow, and for whatever reason, the fire has kind of gone out of them, and they all realize that this has gone on long enough, the evening is no longer fun, yeah, they should let Rupert P. go. There was something wrong. I could feel it even before I knew what it was. Something about the darkness in the room, the stillness. I knew the other girls could feel something was wrong too, all except Apple. We all stayed still while she moved forward. She walked up to his chair. Rupert, she said. Silence. Rupee? Aaron, Isabel, and I may have been the farthest from him, but I think we all got it before Apple did. But when she did get it, when she lifted his head and saw his eyes and mouth bulged open in a silent scream, she was the only one to say it out loud. OMG, Apple said. He's dead! Ah, yes, forget a kidnapped boy bander. We now have a kidnapped boy bander body in their room. This just, it keeps getting, oh my gosh. I had kind of thought as I was reading this in the beginning, like, oh, maybe they'll kill him. I didn't really expect it to happen. But yeah, Rupert P. is dead. At some point, the tights got moved from his eyes to his neck, and he is dead as a doornail in their hotel room. This is, no pun intended, the killing blow for this already struggling group of friends. They immediately all start blaming each other. And when someone brings up the concept that, oh, he must have killed himself, like while he was trying to get free, he's pulling on this stuff with his hands and it slipped down and he must have strangled himself. So they start by immediately blaming each other, and then they kind of come to this uneasy truce where it's like, okay, maybe he killed himself. Maybe he killed himself. But Erin calls her dad, who is a cardiologist, I guess, and she tells our MC quietly on the side that she gave her dad a hypothetical question. If someone like that in that situation could kill themselves, and her dad, who is a doctor, says no, that you could not because you would lose consciousness and go slack before you have the ability to cut off the oxygen to your own throat. So as he's pulling, he would lose consciousness, his arms go slack, he would actually live, which means that someone did murder him. The only ones who knew he was there were the four girls. They all present alibis, but our MC doesn't want to reveal that she was with Rupert Kay, so she lies and says that she went back down to the bar. She doesn't want to be in the room with the body anymore, so this time she really does go down to the bar, reflecting on why she believes any one of her friends could have killed Rupert P. Apple, because he was her crush and he rejected her. Erin, because she stated that she wanted to kill the boy band. Isabel, because reporting the death of Rupert P. would be the biggest thing to ever happen to her website. And as we know, she really just cares about her website more than anything else. While our MC is down at the bar, Erin once again joins. And then as they're talking, Michelle Hornsberry randomly approaches them and acts like they are best friends. Remember, Michelle is Rupert P.'s beard fake girlfriend who they approached earlier in the bar and who basically just like dissed them and was like, ugh, whatever, weirdo fans. Now she comes up and she's like, hi, girls, best friends. And it's really weird. And she reveals to them that she doesn't have a room, which is odd. So she asks if she can stay with them. Erin says, sure, but plans to ditch her. So Erin says, you know, I'm gonna ditch her. I'm gonna take her outside, and then the Rupert fans are gonna basically swallow her up in their masses. And you go upstairs and warn the other girls just in case I can't do that. So the MC goes back to the room while Erin goes off with Michelle. They need to move the body, so they stuff him into Apple's suitcase, which was previously filled with popcorn, and they bring him up to the band's room, so to his room. Once they get there, they set him up in a beanbag chair, and they're about to get out of there when, of course, the boys start coming back, and the girls have to hide in the closet, and they get to kind of hear the Ruperts seeing Rupert P's body. And now the Ruperts are like, oh shit, people will think we killed him. And they leave so that they can quickly try to figure out what to do. And the girls make their escape. Once they get back to the room, our MC starts having a nervous breakdown, which she says is something that has happened to her before. And she wants to go confess. But Michelle shows up. Don't know how she figured out their room. She said something about, like, she asked the person at the front desk, which seems very sketch to me, and she finds them there, so they're kind of stuck with her now. As all this is going on, our MC notices that Rupert K has tweeted something that he had said to her earlier, so she thinks that that means that she should meet him on the roof. So she goes up to the roof, and sure enough, he's there, and they kind of have a conversation about loss and something bad that's happened. And she, of course, doesn't reveal that she knows Rupert P is dead, but that's what she knows he's talking about. And then they go down to the indoor pool where they sit for a while and chit chat. And then they have that perfect kiss, which is exactly as she had hoped it would be, right down to the fishing for it detail. It is 100% exactly like she had fantasized about. They are interrupted by their phones going off, and they both pull them out to see a breaking news headline that says Rupert P. jumped to his death from the top of the hotel. So the dumb model Rupert and the jerk pretty Rupert came up with the great idea of throwing dead Rupert off the roof, and they can't even do it right because he falls into scaffolding, and just it's a mess. I mean, clearly you can see that he has been strangled ahead of time, and then Rupert L, who is the dumb one, posted up this big tweet from Rupert P's Twitter saying, like, goodbye, cruel world, and it's all spelled wrong. So these two have just made it infinitely worse for everyone involved. Our MC runs back to the room where Michelle has found a pair of Rupert P's underwear, moment of gag for that, that Apple had stolen. And she accuses the girls of killing him,
So Apple gets really mad and throws her out. This is the only time that you honestly get any sort of emotion from Apple. She's just like, you know what? You think that you can just boss us around because you're famous? Get out. You can't prove anything. And she throws her out. Meanwhile, the police are thinking that the other Ruperts had something to do with Rupert P's death. So they go ahead and arrest them. Meanwhile, the group of friends, they start accusing each other again, and they jump to the conclusion that our MC must have done it, because Erin reveals that she was in the bar at the time of Rupert P's death, and she knows that our MC was not there. Cornered, MC has no choice but to reveal that she was actually with Rupert K at the time, but that does not go over the way she expected it. Let me guess, Isabel said. You were with him when Rupert P, quote unquote, jumped off the roof, too. Actually, yeah, I was. You expect us to believe that? This is exactly why I didn't tell you in the first place. I know it sounds crazy, but it happened. He tweeted, "Bright lights, big city." It was something we'd talked about earlier, so I knew where to find him. Erin had her phone out instantly. He didn't tweet that, she said. Yes, he did. Erin's right, Apple said. There's no tweet like that on his feed. Then he must have deleted it. We all would have seen it, though, Erin said. No, you guys were too busy listening to Michelle Hornsbury's stories. I saw the tweet as soon as it went out. He probably just deleted it like 2 seconds later. You imagined it. Isabel, on her hind legs now and smiling. Her smile this time wasn't one of a beast about to pounce, but of one who'd already devoured her prey, satisfied. All I was to her was something stuck between her teeth. You imagined the tweet, just like you imagined meeting Rupert K. You're literally crazy. No, I'm not. Erin told me about the time you spent in that psych ward freshman year. I stared at Erin, a dagger through the heart, twisting. It wasn't a psych ward, I said in a low voice. It was after my breakdown, my moment of paralyzing fear after my dad's death. My mom took me to her hospital, but I wasn't even admitted. It wasn't a psych ward, I said again. Erin was the only one I told. Everyone else just thought I'd been out sick for a couple of days. How could she tell Isabel? You know nothing about that. You know what else Erin told me? That you like to fantasize about Rupert K. You imagine he's with you all the livelong day. Face it, all of your lies have facilitated your slow spiral into insanity. I was too embarrassed to be fully angry. I'm not crazy. Sure, Isabel said, and you also didn't kill Rupert P. I did meet Rupert K. He told me about his hobbies. He told me what direction he wants his music to go in. Let me guess, video games and folk? Isabel said. It's in all of his interviews. Folk dubstep. Doesn't that sound made up to you? My heart sped up, my breath trying to catch up. Isabel was wrong. Just because she spoke with authority didn't make anything she said true. She didn't know anything. I did not kill Rupert P. Girl, you're being real messy right now. You're consumed by your obsession, Isabel said. The rest of us, we know how to handle it, but you? You go insane. I don't. You hallucinate. Stop it. And now it's escalated to murder. No. I looked down at myself, at my clothes, at my hair. I looked crazy. I kept telling myself I wasn't crazy, but what Isabel said was gnawing at me. Maybe she was right. Maybe I'd told one too many lies. I'd always made up stories. Had the lines just blurred between the real ones and the fake ones? So, yeah, she might be a little bit psycho. After this, the friend group is basically over, as one would expect. They all separate and they go their own ways. Our final moment is a random one in which our MC goes back to the hotel room because she doesn't really know what else to do, and she meets Michelle there. And Michelle suddenly comes out with this big confession saying that she, Michelle, killed Rupert P. because he didn't respect her and wouldn't even get her a room. Cut to our MC telling all of this to a cop, and we realize that as we have been reading this whole story, and she keeps saying this is for the reader, she has been telling this as a witness statement. So she's trying to tell the cops the truth about what she witnessed there and pinning it all on Michelle. But the cop doesn't believe her, and he says that he has taken dozens of statements from fans who all claim some inside knowledge about how Rupert P. met his demise. And except for a few closing notes, that is essentially the end of the story. And for being such a simple premise, there's a lot that went on within here. So let's roll up our sleeves and let's unpack what we have. Warning, this is going to be messy. It is going to get into a lot of random theories because ultimately what we have, what we know, is that a boy bander is dead and we don't know who killed him. This is a murder mystery. First of all, let's focus on the fact that we open with the quote about lying, and we have a main character who refuses to give her real name. That means that we ultimately have an unreliable narrator. I love books with unreliable narrators, and I didn't expect one here, so that was a pleasant surprise, because it means that we, as the audience, need to figure out if we can trust them or how much we can trust them. So, do I trust this narrator? I trust her about as much as a shrieking mom at a Justin Bieber concert. Or as much as that one random weird guy who in the Star Wars prequels said to Obi-Wan, "You want to buy some death sticks?" Yeah, that guy. That's about how much I trust our MC. I trust her less than zero. The fact that she is here with her friends and none of them call her by her real name at least once, and she doesn't even tell it to us, is weird, right? And you might say, like, well, she might have taken it out because she's trying to protect herself. But no, her whole thing is that she wants to come clean and reveal evidence. So if that's the case, the first thing you would do is establish credibility by saying, this is who I am, I'm a real person, my friends are real people, this is what we witnessed, this is an actual legitimate witness statement. The fact that she refuses to tell us who she is means that we can't really trust her. Now, as this plot was moving forward, I started to notice something that was really pissing me off. So we have Aaron, who obviously is, you know, the beautiful one, and she goes through a lot of development, right? We kind of have her being a little bit cold, but she's still kind of a fangirl, and then we just get this big reveal from her, and we see how she has been hurt and how she has been jaded, and we just get a lot of development out of Erin. Also our MC, right? Because she starts talking about how being a fangirl is the greatest thing in the world, and then she ends by saying, like, claiming to us that she has to take responsibility for things and blah, blah, blah. So she's also kind of advancing. But Apple and Isabel, they never change. They are basically negative stereotypes, like really negative stereotypes. Like I said in the beginning, Apple is this overweight Asian girl and she's not smart, like not at all. And so you've got this kind of stereotype of like the simple little sweet fat girl, which was really just kind of disturbing. And then even more so was Isabel, who's just this violent Hispanic, like she wants to be in a gang or something, and she's just using Spanish in her threats constantly. It was bordering on the point where I was getting a little uncomfortable here. It's like, this is what's happening, that our two minority characters are being given these really, really negative stereotypes. And I especially didn't understand that because clearly, from what you've heard, our author can write. She can write well and she can develop characters. So what's going on? And as we continued going,
and we got more into the unreliable narrator bit, I realized that our author is not the one telling this story. Our MC is. And our MC has been shown to be not a nice person. She's jealous. She doesn't like anyone else, especially Isabel, because Isabel is hanging out with Aaron, and she does not like that. She is constantly making fun of Rupert P and just being really just, she's not a nice person. She wants to have this image of herself as the voice of reason, but then she ultimately doesn't really do anything. The minute things don't go her way, she just kind of storms out and waits there for her friends to come and get her. So everything functions around her in this story and in her life. And as we saw later, she has spent time, or at least, you know, she claims it was only a little visit, but she has been shown to be mentally unstable in certain situations, certain high stress situations, which this certainly is. So we can't really trust her. And further proof of that is that our MC opened the story, remember, by talking about how if you are a good liar, then you don't really have to tell the truth, that you should not be obligated to tell the truth if you are a really good liar and you can get away with it. She is someone who is only telling this story for her own benefit. So one of two things is happening here. Either of these four friends, she really only cares about Aaron, her best friend, and she is intentionally making Apple and Isabel look bad, especially Isabel. I think she wants us to believe that Isabel could be the one responsible. And she even says in the very end something to that effect. She says, "But if I were making all of this up, I would probably just make Isabel out to be the murderer or something. Don't you think?" So she is constantly digging on Isabel and making Apple look stupid. And that is because I think either she wants those two to look extra bad so that she and Aaron look better, or that it takes blame away from her and Aaron, or, and hear me out on this, the reason maybe why Apple and Isabel are so offensively flat and underdeveloped is maybe they don't exist at all. That's right. I am not entirely convinced that our MC has any friends named Apple and Isabel. I think she just might have made them up for this story by playing on hurtful stereotypes to, again, make herself look better. And like I said, this is especially the case with Isabel, who she just keeps slamming as this violent, unstable, scary girl. If you are telling the story of, you know, how you accidentally got involved in this murder situation, that is exactly the stereotype that you would put in there, right? This is really, really terrible of her. And she says that she claims that Isabel has like ties to mobsters and criminals, and that she cares about no one. She only cares about this website, right? And all the other girls, they at least supposedly care about the guys, but she says that Isabel doesn't really even care about the guys. Isabel just cares about her website. So she's cold and impersonal. And I think that this is just the type of character that a wildly inexperienced writer might make out of ignorance, or a person who wants to prey on other people by hyping up prejudices to make herself look better. And if this is the case, if Apple and Isabel are in fact fake, then I think that it's the latter situation. I think that our MC is really not a trustworthy person, and I think that she just might have made up these characters to just either throw white noise so that it'll take away from her and from Aaron, or just from her, or because she wants us to outright
blame somebody else. And she's using prejudices to do that. Which means that she is a much worse person than we might even think she is. Which brings us to her alibi, that she was with Rupert K. at the time of Rupert P.'s death. Guys, is there anyone out there who believes that this happened? She writes fanfics about this guy, and then he shows up, and it's literally just like a fanfic. Like, she's about to throw herself off the building, and he saves her, and they tumble down together, and then he tweets these magical big lights, bright city, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And then the perfect kiss, which just so happens to be exactly the same kiss that she described earlier, right down to talking about fishing for it. There's just no way. There's no way that this is real. I don't believe she ever met Rupert K. I really don't. I think that these were more of those realistic daydreams she had, right? She's talked about how she cannot handle stress. That's what she blames it on. And I think that in this stressful time, when she realized that Rupert P. was dead, that she just went off by herself and she full out daydreamed this, which means that she has some memory loss about whatever else she was doing in these moments. Or she's writing fanfic to cover it up. So what exactly in this narrative is real? I keep coming back to the scene of Erin telling that story about how she was abused. There's no flash and flare about that. It's just a straightforward, and it's so, so sad. That, to me, has a ring of truth about it. So this is my interpretation of the whole everything that we just read, everything that's going on here with our unreliable narrator and these weird secondary characters that don't develop and this dead boy and these hallucinations. Here's my interpretation. This is the story of a young woman who got so hyped up in her fandom that she let it take her down a bad path. She thought that by objectifying herself for the boy she was obsessed with, she would find happiness. Instead, she was treated like an object. Unable to focus on how to heal, she turned her revenge as a way to fill that gap in her soul. I think that is the ultimate true nugget of what is happening here, and everything else is kind of up for interpretation, including who is that girl? Well, I again have two explanations. It's one of two things. Either it is Erin, and Erin is the, you know, best friend of our MC, exactly as the MC describes, and that's why she puts so much effort into herself and Erin and making them look good, because that's her best friend and she wants her to look good, so she spends a lot of time developing her and a lot of time making Apple and Isabel look terrible. Or maybe there never was a BFF duo of Erin and MC, and maybe that's why we don't know our narrator's name. Maybe our MC and the girl who lost herself in pursuit of this guy are one and the same, and she's just presenting her story through the eyes of another narrator so that no one will figure out it's her. After all, if she's good at lying, you know, she told us so herself. Why wouldn't you? And what about Rupert P.? I do not buy the tacked-on ending, given without true motivation that his fake girlfriend Michelle just killed him over a room. She's famous. She's rich. Why would she ever? You can get another hotel room somewhere else. That's stupid. I can't. No. And that she's just like standing in the room and is like, I need to release my guilt, so I'm going to tell you this. No, I don't buy it for a second. That is fake and it is tacked on at the end. And I think the only thing that really happened with Michelle was the very first scene where they see her at the bar and she's very standoffish. I think from that point on, when they're saying like, oh, Michelle's kind of acting weird, that's all fake. That's a lie. It's too contrived, it's too convenient and perfect, just like those scenes with Rupert K. It reads like fanfic.
And whether it was two best friends or just one very good liar, I believe that Rupert P. was killed off by our MC out of revenge, and that this whole entire thing, the distraction characters of Apple and Isabel, the implausible explanation with Michelle, was just a way for the author to come clean about what she did without outright admitting her guilt, because she wants the world to know the truth about what happened to her or to her best friend, Erin. But ultimately, we never find out the answer. All we're left with is pieces that don't quite make sense together. A narrator whose only constant is that she knows how to tell a damn good lie and that she is not a very good person, for sure not a good friend, and a boy band that both literally and figuratively was killed. I loved the way this book made me think and used such subtlety to let the reader interpret what really happened. And I love that we don't get a straight answer. We still have many, many answers that we could go with, right? Are Apple and Isabel real? Are they just presented so poorly because our MC is trying to frame Isabel for stealing her best friend? What's going on with those two? What's the whole thing with Michelle and with Erin? There's so many things that you could discuss about this, and we don't get any answers. I think that a bunch of different people could read this book and come up with totally separate thoughts on what's real and what's not. If you read this just as a straightforward narrative and you trust everything that our narrator is saying, then this would not be a very good book. It would be disappointing in the way that the minority characters are presented. It would be kind of frustrating in the conclusion. But remember, we start with the quote about being a good liar. This person does not feel like she has to tell us the truth because she's a good liar, so she can get away with it. And I love that angle. Just the way that she wrote it was just really well done. It's a ride. And I love that it also had, in the midst of all this craziness, really solid arguments, both for the joy of being a fangirl and against the dangers of making your whole entire life an obsession with some celebrity, to the point that you are willing to become a toy to them and you don't see your own value anymore. This book is why I read YA. So 5 stars easily. I should have more fanfare for that since this is our quest, but 5 stars. I went in expecting a comedy, and in addition to some laughs, I got deep, honest reflections of a very dark world of lies, hallucinations, prejudices, and death that needed to be sorted through. And ultimately, we are left with an unsolved murder mystery that is left up to us to figure out. I think she did it. I think RMC killed Rupert P. The stuff with Rupert K is made up. The stuff with Erin is true. It either happened to Erin or it happened to her, but that really happened. Rupert P. was killed out of revenge. Apple and Isabel, they're just there as distractions. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of The Great YA Quest, where we discussed Kill the Boy Band by Goldie Moldovsky. Although this is not the first 5-star YA book I've read, it is the first one I've encountered while doing this show, so yay, success! But of course, as long as there is YA, wherever a hot, angry boy is being smelled by a grouchy but secretly skilled girl of average beauty but stunning military ability, I will be there so that you don't have to be. Our quest is far from concluded. If you're interested in seeing what other YA books I've rated 5 stars over the years, I have a highlight of them all on my Instagram, which is at ReneeMPTCray. If you want to chat with me more about your thoughts on this book, if you've read this book, I've seen very mixed reviews on this. There are some people who loved it because of its dark twistiness and just the horror that is our MC. And I've seen some people who really hated it because they read it straightforward and they were like, this is against fangirls and this is just horrible, whatever, it makes no sense. So let me know your thoughts. And in the meantime, I'll leave you with a quote from the book that we'll be covering next month. He sits down on the edge of the sofa and Gideon nears us. I'm going, he says, his gaze veering to the rug. He can't even look at me. You sure? Asher asks. My mom always makes enough dinner for you. I thought we were going to sit around and watch movies tonight. I'm supposed to go to that party, Gideon says, running a hand over the back of his neck. I'll see you later, Cass. Then he and his comforting scent walk out the front door. The YA boy scent is back. Did you guys miss it this time around? I didn't, but let me know what you think Gideon's signature intoxicating boy smell will be. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll chat with you next month for our next installment of The Great YA Quest.